It means the other pattern, the other world, the other pattern, perhaps. Zappa is still alive, especially on payday. Yes? Are you sending it to the chat line, Bert, or my email?
I can post it in the chat line. I send it to Ion. I send it to your Ion email, but I can post it on the chat as well.
Roxanna posted on my, maybe on her Facebook, but on my Facebook too. She has a little, you know, those little bulbs you put on trees, Christmas tree bulb.
Yeah.
And she says, ho, ho, ho. It says on it has a beard, his Zappa's mustache and goatee or whatever. And then it says Zappa on this Christmas tree bulb. And she goes, ho, 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 get ready for the thunders. I'm so happy I could cry. That's the kind of people who post on my Facebook. My Facebook? Yeah, I'm not fooled by Android meme, right? Trying to tell me. You mean to tell me I have a Facebook page? All right, there it is. Okay, so put in the word. What was the word?
Fractals.
Fractals. So, please just go up before. German, the kind of laughs he gave us are German laughs. Talking about the Ensemble Moderne, I think. Some woman had a great time hanging out with her. Hanging out with him. So then he says, you gave them all these opportunities. You have a reputation for being a mentor of the young and or foster of unknown people's careers. How did that happen? I think they're probably something to do with fractals. The more I think about fractals, the more the whole idea of fractals relates closely to what I do. Well, I was explaining the fractal earlier, many hours ago. Somebody posted the Bob
really?
Head. Yeah, the J.R. Bob Dobbs head on my site, or on the Facebook. And so it's got the traditional Dobbs face. So then it's made up of all these little dots. So you go into the dots, and they become little Bob Dobbs heads. So the big head is made up of the little ones. So I explained how that was the interplay of co-anesthesia and synesthesia. Co-anesthesia being the integrated tendency toward a centralized icon. Now that's the image you first see. But then it fragments, decentralizes into micro Bob heads. So Frank, his work is one big album. You get all these little reflections of the big album as separate parts inside the fractal. So we could agree with that. So the guy goes, how so? Now, did you want to read something about this, or we just read it?
You can read it. Go ahead.
The guy says, how so? Well, if you're trying to divine order out of chaos, that's a little bit presumptuous. But then, on the other hand, so is the concept of chaos. So I would say that the fractal theory falls in the cracks between those two attitudes, right? That's right. It's tactility. It's the interplay between synesthesia and co-anesthesia. And rhythmically, if you're dividing the universe into twos and threes, which is basically what happens with all polyrhythmic subdivisions, you are to some degree missing the boat, the fractal boat. If you can think of rhythm as an extension of the fractal universe instead of even subdivisions of twos and threes grouped into 11s and 13s or whatever, if you can think of microsecond relationships as being valid components of polyrhythms, then you're getting closer to the way I view things. This is good. This is probably him explaining digital dust. never saw this, well, I read this, you know, 20 years ago, but have not reread it. And if you can, transferring that into the anthropological domain, how I wound up being, in your words, a mentor to these kinds of people, it just seems that the odds are in my favor that if I keep doing what I'm doing, we will meet. Yeah, that's true. That's Dobbs sound talk. So then the guy says, you made the comment that listeners accept polyrhythms in their music and African drum music with much greater ease than they do dissonance. Why is it that harmony seems to linger around so much? And Frank says, rap music may bring an end to that. Think about it. What is so precariously consonant about spoken words? It used to be, in order to have something acceptable as broadcast material or even listenable material, it had to be saturated with consonants. And although rap music is not dealing with harmonic combinations of major and minor seconds, it is certainly dealing in dissonance. The guy says, that's true. You've done a lot with spoken material, too, such as that thing with Steve Vai, tracking your voice. Zappa says, oh, yes, on Dangerous Kitchen. Yeah, well, where he wrote the, well, I'd have to call it a scat because there's no other word for it. It's on that Jazz Discharge Party Hats. It's on that and that Jazz Discharge Party Hats. He transcribed it and then learned it on the guitar, then played it on the record. But I think that the other better example of spoken material would be something like Dumb All Over. Why is it okay to hear really strange rhythms but not to hear really strange harmonies? Well, arguing the other position, people do assimilate really strange harmonies when they are accompanied by the appropriate image. Do you mean like in horror movie music when the maniacal slasher is about to come? Zappa says, exactly. The other guy says, it's got to be visually triggered. Well, says Frank, the society has been so saturated with visual data, and the audio that goes along with those pictures stays in your tissue, kind of like dioxin. And you hear the slasher music, you know what slasher texture is. You know slasher harmony. And if you hear anything that sounds like slasher harmony and there's no slasher, you're still going to feel the slasher. So the guy, interviewer says, then the question becomes, have the visual media people created the proper image to go with the sound? Frank says, well, if I were going to do a slasher movie, I could be a lot scarier than the shit that they stick in there. I thought that the pinnacle, the thing that everybody has gone for since it was established as a slasher norm, was the squeak, squeak, squeak from Psycho. Most film scoring for tense moments runs a gamut from squeak, squeak, squeak to the filter opening up on the mini moog on the low note. Not much in between there. The guy then says, how do you think Schubert would feel knowing that the unfinished symphony is the Smurfs theme? Well, how do you think that the people in America would feel if they knew where the Smurfs came from? They were an advertising device for British Petroleum. When we went to Holland for the first time with the band with Mark and Howard in 70 or 71, the whole place was riddled with fucking Smurfs advertising British Petroleum. And the joke in the band was, Smurf me. Because on the billboards, that's what they said, Smurf me, spelled M-E-E-E. I don't know what it means, but to go from that to what we now have is a family of Smurfs with their own personalities. According to Ahmet, who saw the spectacle on television, he witnessed an interview with a guy who was one of the Smurf voices, taking himself so seriously that it beggared description. I mean, he did about a 5-minute routine on this guy, his son Ahmet did. Then the interviewer says, there's our cultural hero. And again, it gets me back thinking of guitar heroes and why they are gunslingers. In your touring days with rock bands, did you see guys out there playing air guitar? Sure. What is that? How come girls don't do it? Well, because their tits get in the way, for one thing. Same reason why you don't see that many girl guitar players unless they're handling it at a low altitude. But I think it's probably because girls are too smart to play air guitar. If ever there was something that the women's liberation movement could use to prove the inferiority of the male species, it's the extremely low number of women who play air guitar. I resemble that remark. I'm a professional air guitarist, proud of the talent. Yeah, and Frank's been hanging out in his library too long. Let's see. We haven't talked about your business. As I understand it, you and Gail handle everything. In the house, we have 3 offices. We've got one upstairs in the bedroom where I do all the liner notes and that kind of word processing stuff. Gail has an office, and then there's another office just you come in the gate that we use for all the phone transactions and that kind of stuff. We have a lab, we have a studio, we have an editing facility, 3 vaults for tape and film. That's all right there. That's all right here where we live. There's two other buildings in the San Fernando Valley. One of them is Joe's Garage, which is a rehearsal facility. And then there's our warehouse where all the equipment stuff comes out of. Gail runs all that. Why did you decide to handle all these things yourselves? Well, I would say there's a certain hose job factor in there, but in reality, it's just good business sense. What's a hose job factor? They got hosed? Nobody else would help them?
Well, maybe. From what I know of hose job, it's sort of like somebody uses you. So it's like a hose
right.
job.
Well, he'd get used if he used someone else, is what he's saying. Be more
yeah.
expensive, probably. What's in that huge vault downstairs? Frank says, since the early 70s, I've collected every interview, every performance clip, everything that was done around the world that I could get a copy of. Then there's all the rest of the footage from Baby Snakes, the movie, the Baby Snakes, or Baby Snakes, the accounts of every documentary that was done in Europe and every place else. And then there's videotape, every format from 2-inch to digital video and all stops in between. Plus all the masters, all the road tapes, and all the 1/4-inch tapes from Cucamonga. That's way back there. The audio tapes go back to 55. Wow. That's pretty amazing. So early on, you were careful about keeping things and keeping them in order. Well, being a pack rat is something, but keeping it in order is another thing. In other words, it's a hellacious chore for someone. Frank says, well, the vault is very well organized, and I know where stuff is, but nobody else does. In order to put it in a condition where anybody could go in there and find anything anytime they needed it, it would take about a year and a barcode generator. Even a student intern wouldn't know what the fuck to do with it, because many of the road tapes have never even been listened to. They are still gaffered shut, just the way they came off the road. And in order to log it, you've got to listen to it. And what intern is even going to know what he's hearing? And the mental notes that I have about what's on those tapes is not only what the tunes are, but where the good versions are. And your only other option to leaving the stuff scattered like that is to go through the arduous process of making logs of everything. Clip the good takes out, collate them, and start yet another library. Does it frustrate you that it's impossible to do all of these things as fast as you would want to? Frank says, yes. Let me put it to you another way. If I could, I'd keep my studio running 24 hours a day. For some of those things that need to be done on the studio level, I don't need to be in the control room with the engineer. I could just give instructions. And because the board is automated, once you've done a mix, if anything needs to be changed in the mix, all you've got to do is go back and tweak a couple of faders and rerun it, and no time is lost. But this engineer that I'm working with, Spence, is a mutant. Because not only does he understand old analog technology, he's still a vinyl guy at home, and he's one of these guys that likes tube amplifiers and all that kind of stuff. But he knows how to operate all of the digital recording equipment. He understands the sonic solutions, and he can even operate that aspect of the thin clavier that interfaces with the recording machines. In other words, I could leave him alone. I could say, quote, call up this sequence, do this, 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 and this, unquote. And he knows how to run all these things. Now, there's not too many recording engineers that I know of that have a hands-on experience with all this gear and do it right. And he's got real good ears for balancing things. I would need three guys like that in order to run 3 8-hour shifts in there. And I feel lucky that I can get him 4 days a week, 10 hours a day. But you know, at the end of the day, when he's got to go back to his wife, I'm sitting there going, quote, oh, well, we almost got that one done, unquote. It drives you crazy a little bit. But then on the other hand, if I were to just hire a bunch of guys to move the faders up and down, I wouldn't get the good result, in quotes. And besides, all these people have very unique personalities. Todd is truly a unique and mysterious character. Same with Don Doroth, and the same with Krizlu. And fortunately, they all get along with each other. It's very amusing to be in the same room with these three guys trying to have a conversation with each other. I really enjoy it. And that's the end of part one. So that's a pretty good section.
Yes.
So what else do you want to talk about?
I found you were talking on What Youth This Week of Eric McLuhan's The Centrist Communist, the book, and it's quite interesting. It makes me wonder if he hasn't peeped on Ion Bob or looked of what you've been doing in the last 6 years. It makes me really wonder.
No, because I don't think he does. Most of the stuff that's in the book is traceable back to McLuhan in the late 60s, early 70s, or middle 70s. So there's nothing really new in that book that he's added to McLuhan. He has said things that McLuhan didn't write out or spell out in detail. He has no clue about the five bodies or what I'm saying. And if he had heard it, he might have something to say, but no, I don't count on him taking in much beyond his own interests. Because what do you see there?
No, I went back and listened to the Revelation series that you did with Ed, and part two was quite interesting, how you were outlining what McLuhan was doing with the with his work, and I found it interesting. I just went into listen to Revelations, and I found you outlined what McLuhan said about imagination.
Right.
So
did you just say that one about Ed? Is that number one?
Yeah, number one. The re-edited portions that were posted last January.
Right.
That actually had the McLuhan references in there, and that was fun to re-listen to again, because it caused me to go look for a quote that you gave about imagination being not connected to the senses, and not embedded.
That which is not embedded in any faculty, sense, or extension thereof.
Yes.
So imagination is in that tactile space between you being in one world and not of it, and also in another world and not of it.
Yeah. And that's now, what I remember asking. Go ahead.
Well, if you're going to, I want to go back to Eric, but if you want to continue what you just said.
No, go ahead. Go ahead to Eric. Go back to Eric.
Well, he says that media come from the soul. The senses are extensions of the soul. So the soul, as we know it, is a recorder of all things, but mainly recorder of your uncreated actions, and they're sent to the guff. If you consider that everything that ever was not created before it was extended into the senses, then they all contained in that archive known as the soul. That might be what Ion's saying. But no, that might be how Eric is related to Ion. But I don't think he means that. But he might. I don't know if we ever get him to talk about it. If he says everything comes from the soul, then the soul is a kind of an archive of unmanifested creations. And then they're manifested, and the soul eventually becomes empty once everybody's reached Iondom levels. So the soul could be what we used to call the Akashic Records. That's sort of Ionic. And that might come from theosophy. I don't think it comes from the Catholic Thomas Aquinas stuff. So we don't know what Eric means by soul. We have to find out what he actually means, whether it includes the extensions of everything that ever was. So I wanted to say that. So, Eric, you could say, oh, it's sort of Ionic. Well, yeah, but it has to be precisely Ionic before I say it's Ionic. Not sort of like some vague approximation, because Ion is very particular about what they mean, as opposed to other people's hand-me-down cliches that they've come across. Okay, go to what you were going to say. Oh, looks like Bert got knocked off. I'm walking over.
No, that was. No, I'm here. I'm here. Oh. I'm here. I'm back. That's the part that his reference to the soul just made me think that maybe he looked into. But if he's using just his father's work, then he could actually pull that out. You're right. I see that.
Yeah. Now, there's another anonymous just came in. Who's that? Do you want to speak? It's just probably Randy Moggins. he's always spying. But what the... I had a little dialogue with Randy Moggins. Let's see.
Recently?
Yes, I don't know how. I think I provoked him, or let me see, how did that begin? So I sent out the video that Roxy made for me dancing last week. All right? So I got out my old bulk list, which has about 126 names on it, and just sent it to everybody who I haven't been sending stuff to for a couple of years. Well, he's on the list from the old days when we were acquaintances. So the title is, I said, just a reminder of who you're dealing with. And these are to people. They're not all of them friends. Just a reminder of who you're dealing with. So then they see me dancing around like a fucking idiot, right? That's who you're dealing with here. And so he writes back, I'm not dealing with anyone, asshole. You are as if you never were. Boom. So I respond, oh, yes, you are. And then I put a big wah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. So that's my response. So then he says, this is fucking pathetic. Listen to this. First, your demeanor with people is atrocious. How to win friends and influence people, methinks not. Then, the absolute arrogance to engage in an out-of-control barrage of non-sequitur, which is your style, there was a time it was modestly amusing. The thrill is gone. So he's taking me, he's taking what I said to him. Oh, yes, you are, implying, yes, you will engage with me. And he's saying, he says, engage? Engage in what? Are things a little slow in Dobbstown? Did the drooling Bob fanboys lose their hard-ons for an anachronism? And I had, wait a minute, maybe I wrote something. Oh, sorry, I think I sent him two emails. So we have to find that. Yeah, that's right. Sorry, when he writes back, I'm not dealing with anyone, asshole. You are as if you never were. And so I wrote back to that. I said, besides sending blah-ha-ha, oh, yes, you are involved with me, or what was the thing called? Dealing with me, yes, you are dealing with me, blah-ha-ha. He writes back. No, I write to him, you know, Randy, have I told you how stupid you are lately? I looked at some panel you were on with some other paranoids a couple of months ago, wherein you said, quote, money was the main evil. I know you're afraid to engage me, but send me over to those other jerks. You all need a good education. I'm willing to take you all on in a debate. Boy, do you guys need it. Your collective ignorance is an embarrassment. You're ruining all the useful work Bob Marshall did in Toronto 30 years ago. ... He was the first, you know. Then I say, please post this on all your buddies' sites. So he writes back, this is fucking pathetic. First, your demeanor with people, you don't know how to talk to anybody, absolute arrogance to engage in an out-of-control barrage of non-sequitur, which is your style, once was modestly amusing, the thrill is gone. Engage in what? Are things a little slow in Dobbstown? Did the drooling Bob fanboys lose their hard-ons for an anachronism? Bob Marshall, ... 30 years ago, ... Toronto, ... whoever that is, it has fallen into the dustbins of collective memory. You see, Randy doesn't listen enough to know the basics. He doesn't even know who Bob Marshall is. Jeez. Anyways, he goes, why would I remember some old talk show host from fucking Canada? He was the first of what? Certainly not talk show hosts. Excuse me, Joe Pine pioneered that medium in 1950 and advanced it to levels even Ion can't touch. Now, isn't that the height of ignorance? This is someone who's in serious denial. This is someone who was a fundamentalist Christian at one point. To end up being a fundamentalist Christian at some point, you have to be seriously brain damaged. I can go in there and infiltrate them, but then to start saying, I can't even touch Joe Pine, who I've heard and is not important. Then he says, like McLuhan, I'm certain in his 15 minutes, Marshall was probably the bomb. It doesn't appear he has any presence in modern culture. There are so many fucking books coming out of McLuhan, it's ridiculous. They used to call it the James Joyce industry. After World War II in the 50s, 60s, they all the academics, he was nice and complicated, so it gave him something to feel more knowledgeable about than the students, right? Feel superior to.
Yeah.
So the Joyce industry, with thousands of books written on Joyce. Well, McLuhan is now reaching that status. Endless, ridiculous books on McLuhan for academics to pretend that they know something about him. But this is an example of Randy and these people. They're not informed well enough to get what's going on here. They got a little, they're too paranoid, too busy trying to figure out what UFO brought in, what alien guy. There's this guy, Alex Weber, W-E-B-R-E. He's always talking about, Obama, you know, as a kid went to Mars and got programmed in Mars, and these ridiculous scenarios, which Ion has redone and added to imaginatively. We actually could believe that in Ionic cosmology, there being several Obamas and this and that. But if you stay and hang out with Arnold or Alex Weber and listen to these people, these numbskulls that come in and get interviewed, within the context of Weber's ideas, you're going to get dull. You're going to get numb. And I remember my foster daughter, Shannon, when she saw Carolyn, after a day or so, she says, "You know, Carolyn, your face glows. Your face glows." And that's because she's living in the present and the huge now and pre-now and after-now. When I saw Randy with his idiots on his panel, they're all pasty, you know, tight-faced, pale. It's got no fucking... They're all black holes. And, you know, then you watch someone like Carolyn and myself, we're glowing. So these are factors I take in when I decide to call someone stupid, because we are giving people, not that we expect them to hear it, we are giving people great breakthroughs. And if they fit us into their stupid memes about spin-offs of Project Camelot, at this point, that's pretty stupid. So,
yes.
It is blatantly, it's a repression. It's a fear that makes you weak, no, makes you pale and liable to ulcers and other diseases, because you're not letting your body flow. You're trying to hold on to some simple image of what you thought is the anti environment to all the noise around you. So now it doesn't mean that McLuhan. I'm on here saying McLuhan's obsolete. He doesn't even know what I say about McLuhan. Not that he's going to listen long enough to learn it, but he types all this stuff and doesn't know how ridiculous it is. He goes, "Newsflash, Bob, the 20th century is over." Doesn't he know that I created the 21st century? We couldn't have made it to the 21st century with my stuff. Then he says, "You know, I am pretty certain that I did not say, quote, money was the main evil." I would agree that he didn't say that. I didn't even want to get it exactly right. The point is he said, we got to get rid of money. And his contribution to the panel, at least the part I saw, was that we've got to get rid of money. And this is stupid because you're not looking at the complexity of it. You don't know how money has been gotten rid of. What about what is still left? There's a lot to analyze there. And you wouldn't say, we got to get rid of money. That's simplified fundamentalist thinking. So he says, or you called that out of context. Yes, I called that out of context. But why should I be accurate with you, Randy? You can't even get the alphabet right. So then he says, when I talk about the subject, I refer to the system of money, the Babylonian black magic system. He says, you know, the one you and your little buddy, J.W. Edwards, used to dupe people into paying $75 for a bottle of yeast. Oh, how is the scammer lately? Those long phone calls from Atlanta federal penitentiaries must get tiring. Now look at, okay, well, I'll just continue and comment on it. You're confused, Bob. See, I'm not the one who has this lust for money. I don't really think about it a lot. I don't hate. I don't love it. It is. Now, there's a stupid statement to say something is. We don't say that anymore. It's isness, are-ness, and to is or not to is. I also do not lie, connive, and fuck people over for it. You, on the other hand, seem to leave a trail of bodies behind you as you stuff your pockets. Since you seem to be totally amoral, I fail to see what substance you could bring to a discussion on the global elite cabal conspiracy, since it seems you are likely a minion of same. I heard all your arcane theories, but seems you muddy the waters on substance. Like I said before, you are a gas bag. Glad you caught the panel discussion. Now you can tell that bitch Ginny I have 11 listeners. As for posting this, meaning what I sent him, it has no context, just the ramblings of a man with too much time in his hands and an ego that outsized his soul. So that's Randy trying to figure me out. So I write back, you've not written one informed and or correct sentence below. You're always an idiot when it comes to what Iandom is. You're always describing your own fantasies of yourself. Again, you are an embarrassment. Stop typing and get on the air and engage. Now, did he respond to that? No, he didn't. So, if we were in it for money, anyways, we don't even have to defend it. We're not a money-oriented thing. We give away billions of dollars worth of goods for free, the good stuff and the bad stuff. JW wouldn't be able to make long phone calls from the federal penitentiary. The RNA drops is not a bottle of yeast. This poor guy is probably getting sicker and sicker. Or maybe he's on that stuff he and Martinez were bragging about. Bucky Fuller or something, Bucky Balls or something. Maybe you tried that a long time ago, right?
No.
Remember the Bucky Ball? Carol knew
it. It was some type of carbon Bucky. I don't remember. It was
it was a substance that somebody named after Bucky Fuller's tetrahedron or whatever it is he made. The Bucky Ball, the Bucky Hedron or something. But so what do you make of this?
It's funny to listen to that, his response to you, and then it makes me ponder that maybe something really happened that Ion, the Ion alluded to a number of times that people were going to purgatory or, you know, going to, like, people die but they don't go to heaven, they go to purgatory, right, or a lower world.
Right.
And just to think about his word, it's like something happened around that time that Andrew did his, I mean, I say Andrew, Matthew did his little thing. It seems like that another world was created and they got sucked into it because they're so far off in trying to describe or to put words on what's going on here. That's the only way I can see it. They're in another world. He's definitely in another world, but somehow you're able to communicate with him with the email because he is so far off, so far off.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. No, that's a pretty good theory. They got sucked into a black hole. Yeah.
I mean, just anyone right now. Anyone who listened to Project Camelot or even, I think Alpha Weber, I think he did something like some type of UFO community, you know, to greet the UFO, the aliens or something. Anyone who still listened to that and didn't catch the gong of interacting with Ion really missed, they're still dealing with the television that, you know, the Take Me to Your Leader, spaceship lands. Comes out in the White House lawn and says, take me to your leader, which...
That's his name, Alfred Weber. Weber. James tried to bring him on to Cashflow back in 2010 or 2011. We were going to interview him. And just before he was to come on the show, he called James and left a message and said that you guys are going to make fun of me. You're setting me up. And I don't know where he got. Maybe he listened to us. Maybe he listened to a bit of our show. Yes, you'd think our circus was a bunch of nuts and not something a respectable nut like him would want to be associated with. You know, if you're a respectable nut, you got a reputation to preserve. So we probably appeared too chaotic. And we would have, I would have gone after him. Not that he would believe anything I said, but he was probably correct. Yes, we were setting him up, but I think it was he had the wrong ideas about why we were setting him up. We were setting him up for his own good, not to hurt him, but to save him, get him out of the black hole. See, you just see the people, these people they interview, Alfred interviews, they don't look good. And Randy didn't look good. I mean, I judge people the way they look, or my mind sees them and says, oh, that guy looks pinched or repressed or happy or ecstatic. First impressions are what I go by. And they, you may find out that they're, if you have an interaction with them, that they're different from what they look like, and you can then accept their repression because they have other interesting aspects of their personality. They can maybe wash dishes really good or mow your lawn really good. You say, oh, yeah, I said this guy mow my lawn. But do you look at people? Well, you're a health nut. I look at people. I get their vibe. I judge how they are looking. How they, yes. What kind of vibes coming out of their face?
Yes, and it's the brightness that they carry, which a lot of folks that if they're still using the words like with Randy Moggins, they're definitely not going to be real bright. They're actually probably going to fade away. I mean, they're not
right.
Using the right language anymore to with what you've done, and definitely what you've done, but. The words that you're laying out gives words of what Carolyn has done, which is what a lot of they're missing. They're really missing the miracles that Carolyn is doing. That she's
every week.
It's the miracles that she's outlined that they're missing. So yes, I mean their words may sound nice in that what do you call it? UFO. Metaphysical world, but if they're not tuning into Carolyn's show, listening to Payday, and taking the complete performance, they've missed the subway. It's probably closed on them. They're still using those words.
Yeah, it seems that people come. Some people come, and they have a pretty good opinion of themselves. They're sort of semi gurus. They don't see themselves as big gurus, but they have a radio show. They have followers, and they have an image of themselves. I think that the Ionic thing threatens that image, and therefore they don't hear everything that's being done, that's being said. They have to block it, or they can't take it. It threatens them. So they listen for an hour or two, then they can't take my what appears to be an ego or some joy de vivre or some silliness, so they tune out, and they miss the third hour where incredible things happened. Then they tune in, you know, 3 weeks later, pick up a bit of what's going on. To fully get what we're doing, you got to listen every minute for 5 years because every hour something incredible is going, coming and going. Happens and then it's gone unless you go back and rewind. So they haven't listened enough, and their personality or vanity or something will not let them be burnt, be exposed to the incredible detailed presentation we make. Does he know how much I critique McLuhan? Does he know how McLuhan is a basket case compared to other things I say? You know? See, it's a surface listening. So, oh, Bob's just doing McLuhan, warmed over McLuhan. No. Many other things. As many things I could talk about that we don't get to because nobody evokes it. So,
He's just showing his literate bias where they think they can come in and, you know, listen to a few words and they think they know what's going on when the words that are used, that you use, I mean, in your chart, all of those holy offices on the charts are just ways of seeing something or describing something that most people have no clue, the Android meme. And now that Ion is here, the solution, I mean, why wouldn't you be braggadocious? You should be. I mean, you were tuning into what Carolyn was doing and what Carolyn brought forth. I mean, there's no other words to put on it but what you do, because it's really big. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable in some aspects, but having, you know, taking the completement formulas and engaging this, it's very believable, but it's hard to explain. It's really hard to explain. I had the chance to try to introduce it German-wise at a family dinner, and it was almost like the family member didn't hear me, you know?
Yeah.
Because I explained it to them, there's no death. You know, they were talking about the energy, and I said, well, you know, there's no death. And they couldn't get their mind around that, so I couldn't really go further. That just stumped them.
Right.
Where do people go? Well, where do people go? I said, well, they come back, but it's not what you think.
Yeah. And the, I can see it's very hard to explain it, but I don't find that they're interested enough to stay with you and give you the benefit of the doubt and listen to your different attempts to explain it. They tune out too quickly. They're not patient.
Yes, that's exactly it. Exactly.
So the, you know, why doesn't Randy come on and we play him November 28th or 27th, 2014, where Carol and I watched the hologram appear. Have him listen to that, or even stop and start, and have him try to critique it, or say it isn't true, and whatever objections. That's where there'd be a genuine or honest interaction. Take what we do, let's listen to it, and you try to pick it apart or make fun of it. Nobody will do that.
No. That's what I find makes it interesting, Bob, is that the whole how the setup that you have on Payday and the environment that most, I mean, like Randy's still probably doing this, the radio, what he thinks is radio, but he's not engaging this new environment that's here.
Right.
Because if he listened to that, even if he listened to you and Carolyn describe that, he, with his mindset, he would doubt it, you know, and say, well, what are you all talking about?
Yeah, he wouldn't want to try to see what's being said or, you know, sort of sympathetically see our side of what we're saying. He then could reject it after, but he doesn't make the effort of putting it on, trying it out, and putting in the normal mental objections that people naturally have about anything new that happens to them. They always resist it. So the, what else to say there? So he might, he said once before we talked about him and he said, look at this people, they're talking about me. You know, like, why are they even thinking about me? He puts on this faux, humility. But we're talking about Randy right now because he wrote a response and it could continue. But he didn't answer my last thing. And I'm honest, I actually think he's an embarrassment. That's what I think. Now, he can try to change my view about it, but I tell him what the ridiculousness of what he says. I mean, people can't be maybe perfect, and we do charge for our products, but we charge reasonably compared to other stuff. And on top of that, we actually believe the stuff is the best stuff in the world, and we could get away with charging $1 million for the stuff. There were people who would buy it once they understood what it did, who had the money. And we could have 10 customers, and that's all. But we try to make it available, and it's a bit expensive to make, but there are reasonable prices. And so it's just practical what we do, and it's not a big greed thing. So if you think it is, then you're not looking at what we're doing. Look at Carolyn giving free archetypal medical advice every week.
Yes.
Showing how a real doctor operates.
And puts it back on them. And puts it back on the person. And it was beautiful. I think she did it a month ago. She wants them to become their own doctor. Now, that is mind-blowing. That's over the top.
Yeah, she's not trying to keep a business going.
No, not at all.
So that's... In a way, it's not worth talking about, but we don't have anything to talk about otherwise, maybe or maybe not. Let's see if anybody's there. We're waiting for playing another amazing thing, the rewrites. The rewrites are interesting because there's a lot of meat, and then there's a lot of silliness, and then there's a lot of digression, then there's back to more meat. That's fun, but it could be, if you heard just a part of it, you'd think, well, there's nothing being said here. Ryan's just teasing somebody about something, but they didn't hear the other part. So So because we have a bit of time here, let's address what he's saying, because other people would say these things too about us. But we're so cool, we're so saintly, we're so good that we can actually act like assholes or be pretend we're mean or pretend we're Illuminati and actually claim we're killing people just because we got so much good collateral on the other side.
Yes. Going back to McLuhan, what I did is I went and listened to that part one, but it was actually the second part of part one that was re-edited by Ed, and it's really, I mean, if anyone's listening, they want to listen to, like, because I know there are plenty of folks to listen and say, why did he keep bringing up McLuhan? I mean, McLuhan is just a way to see some things, but you outlined it so beautifully in part two of that Revelations of what's important, and it blew me away after hearing it. I mean, I heard it last, you know, beginning of the year, but hearing it again about the imagination and how Ion is guiding us towards having a knowing, and that knowing you connected it to having the imagination.
Yeah, the way McLuhan describes imagination. Yeah, the definition of imagination by McLuhan is the closest to an Ionic definition. If Ion had to make a definition. I mean, and now reading Eric's book, it's interesting that you think, well, he's been listening to us. Well, let's look at it this way. I was always correct in saying McLuhan was the closest philosopher to Iondom and always relevant, and I was saying that way back at the beginning. And these books that have come out since then support that, where you read them and say, well, this is sort of Ionic. Is Eric listening to our show? And a lot of those articles are written years ago. And he repeats articles in different books. He's lazily sending out stuff he did a long time ago. I don't know if there's much new stuff. So they could have been written before Ion. But you look at them, you see there's something Ionic in here, very close to it. And that supports my original position that McLuhan is one of the closest thinkers to what Ion's about. And it's shown by these books.
And even in that part of Revelations, Ion, I said, did not push in against McLuhan when Ed questioned you on that. So, you know, it's useful of what McLuhan presents, because he was looking at that about technology and how it changes us. And then if you look at what Revelations is, it's all connected. And Ion has been here since we engaged them with February 2014 up until September 2015. And if you go back, I've been going back and listening to a lot of different little things from my own little personal research thing. It's amazing the perceptions that Ion gives on those tapes.
Instantly, rapidly.
Yes.
Instantly and rapidly. Yeah, I imagine there's a lot. I've never gone back and heard them. I know there's a lot of good stuff. Now, there's another thing.
So much.
Right, the, what is it, just before that, we're talking about how McLuhan is in there, and then I'm saying, when I was saying that McLuhan was important, then Ion, then we get the Revelation series, because the early Ionettes were objecting to McLuhan before we did the Bible. Before we did the Book of Revelation. Then we did the Book of Revelation. We found out the Ion thought that the Dark Ages began with the printing press. Now, that's not a new idea when you know McLuhan. And McLuhan goes into that pretty comprehensively, the services and disservices. Ion's actually a bit sloppy compared to McLuhan. But Ion has other things more important to do later of the effect of Ion. But the... there's no other thinker saying what Ion said. Oh, there is. McLuhan said it. So I was very delighted by that when it came out of the Book of Revelation series, that there was exactly the same thing. And then we got other interviews, other audio that we found that I've played, where McLuhan goes into New Agey non-physical topics, and it's right up sympathetic with Ion, not 100%. But you can't name anybody else, and since Ion's the hidden ground of our time, McLuhan is relevant to the 21st century just because he is something that people can get a handle on that already happened, since they would find it hard to accept Ion, just it's natural to resist it. But
yeah,
McLuhan is the right guy. And then now we're proving Zappa is important in here. Everybody on the chart. So it's really immature and silly what Randy is focusing on. He's making accusations. The Babylonian black magic system, well, that's a product of writing. What about the pre-writing Babylonian or pre-Babylonian or Atlantean or Lemurian stuff that's on the chart? You know, don't get stuck with Babylon. Babylon actually was probably a pretty nice culture for the people who lived in it at the time. Yeah, it's, and you recognize these ideas are just limited knockoffs of Coast to Coast and Project Camelot.
Yes.
And those guys are pitiful. And just that they don't know how to talk outside of what they think they know about. They don't know anything about other things. They only know what they've read up on based on Alan Watt guy or some other jerk that has emphasized some old manuscripts. Let's see if we get any commentary coming through here. Good night, Melbourne. It's the festive season. Great Zappa. Zappa is still alive, especially on payday. Bert's mother-in-law interview. Then Robert says, there has been a few location issues on YouTube. When I went to watch McLuhan novels videos, they were all restricted. Could not watch. Yeah, they, Roxy restricted some of them, but then opened it up. So I'll ask her about why would it still appear restricted. They should be available. Then Robert says, last year, the same place last year, a purple mop appeared on Christmas Day. There was a blonde blow-up doll later. A bath with fancy tabs appeared. I left both of them to it. It would have been nice to figure out what he means. The same place. So something a year ago, there was a purple mop appeared on Christmas Day. In the same place, there was a blonde blow-up doll. Later, a bath with fancy tabs appeared. I left both of them to it. I think Robert's hallucinating a little there. Pamela, geo-blocking is extensive. What's geo-blocking? And then she says, but could you find the panda? Maybe she's addressing Robert. Robert goes, thanks, Pamela. Eucalyptus leaves panda or the antivirus one. Another incomprehensible statement. Pamela says, I don't know, Robert. The one on iBob. Pamela, I tried to tell Carrie about Iron Bob back in 2010. Yes, and what happened? She just typed that. That's the latest thing. You tried to tell Carrie about Iron Bob. Who's Carrie? Back in 2010. Well, you can try to invent ways of talking about Ion. Maybe just put it on in the background, and people start to notice all the laughter, all the this, all the strange statements. Then they ask, what's that? That might be one way to present Ion, get them in a room and put the audio on. But I grant you, it's impossible to get anybody, any texting penguin, to be somewhere with you for an hour. That's pretty hard. Yeah, I can see why Ion is only going to with those people that show up. Yeah, too many people are lost, can't get them back. And I said, that's not a problem. So Pamela says, oh, Cassidy, so Carrie, that's right. You tried to tell her about, well, what happened, Pamela? Were you a member in high standing over there? They respected your opinion? You don't want that known about yourself. Yes, I understand it's Project Camelot. So what happened? Well, how did you try to tell her? Did you do a good job, really?
Call in,
well,
Pamela.
She's in Australia, you know. I think she sent me these pictures. She's on vacation. She's lounging around naked in some place in Australia. She's showing me all her private body parts. and her husband's there egging her on. It's like they're like swingers trying to seduce me, trying to get me to come there and taste the delights of Pamela and her husband. You should see these pictures. Like, totally provocative, naked, swinger type stuff. Right, Pamela? If Robert can hallucinate, I can fucking hallucinate too. No, she says no, high standing. Okay, so you have high standing, Pamela. Tell us what you did. How did you say it? Why didn't she respond? Well, first of all, she can't respond. She's got a public role. She must defend her nonsense. That's the disservice of becoming a public figure. Then she said, no, I'm not. Oh, she doesn't have high standing, I guess. See, we're trying to just establish that. You have no high standing. Okay, Pamela, what did you say to them? Oh, no, I think she's saying, no, I'm not. She's not naked. Oh, sorry. Now she's smiling. Now it's all mixed up. I don't know what she's responding to. But let's start over again, Pamela. How did you present it to her? Of course, that's a lot of typing. I don't know. Why don't we, since Pamela doesn't listen, or maybe she does, I don't know if she listens, but she does a lot of typing, why don't we play a rewrite and let Pamela type up a bunch of stuff to tell us where it went, if she's going to do it at all. Are you interested in hearing rewrite number 35? We heard 34. You've heard 37, 38, 39, 40, 41. So we could try 35, the second last of the first wave. Wonder what's on it. Actually, I could actually look at my... I did make an inventory of it. I do know what's on it if I took a chance to look, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go over there. So we go to Documents, Ion Folder, Rewrite, number 35, scan down, 35, there's one version, two version, 34, 33, there it is, I'll take this one. And this one will be, see how long it'll be. So, Bert, have you, when Ion comes back, have you got your questions ready? Do you have some main question that's built up in Ion's absence?
Yes.
A whole new topic or something?
But I've got to formulate them some more, because the more that I have a question, I write it down, I find an answer. So I'm digging to get about at least three good questions from all the other stuff. But every time that I have a question, I write it down, and then I do some scanning of the archives, and I find the answer. So I'm peeling the onion. So some good questions.
Yeah, you came in 2012, so you had to re-listen. You never heard the cash flow as they were happening. You had to go back and hear them all. And
yes.
Probably it was a lot of stuff, so you have to hear them again. A lot of stuff you missed, because you hadn't heard them the first time.
Yes,
right.
But I'm talking mainly of the subjects that Ion covered, like in some of the catalog items I'm going back through, and also mixing it with a lot that they discussed in 2014 and 2015, like negative pH and the ICEL. There's some
really, I wish that you would make notes, or maybe you have notes. I'd like to know when he first brings up negative pH. Where do you first know?
Okay.
Let's get the early date on that. And a couple of other points, like where just no major things where he first brings it up. And, of course, it's way ahead of us, right? We don't get into it till a year or two later, probably. Right?
Okay, yeah, you're right. I'll assimilate that, because the negative pH, the one tape, I have to go back and find when they first mentioned it, but the one archive tape that Ed made of negative pH is very, very good. You were cross with everyone on there. You and Ion were button heads, but there was a lot of good information. But I'll let you know. I'll send you what I find as far as when they first.
Is that a rewrite?
No. This was a In 2014, I think it was September 2014. I can't really recall the date, but I have it, but I'll send it to you. But there was really a lot of good information.
Was that evoked by me biting his head?
Well, you, and then it was a lot of ladies, Jean, Sarah, Big Sarah, Susanna, Eliza, who else?